AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, getting to an early start on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Governor Tim Walz is giving a press conference, so we're going to go ahead and join that since it just started, I think, a couple seconds ago.
The COVID-19 situation, I would just simply say that there's reasons to be optimistic that, again, I don't act like this thing is over. I think, as Mike Osterholm says, we might be in the early innings. The good news is, though, is that we have a pretty good trend line that we were hoping for that's relatively flat. Our case infection rates are at about 3.5% on a 7-day running average. Our capacity in ICUs and hospital space is within the tolerance. We still we have five major areas that we're looking at to rate on from red to green, basically. A few of them we're a little bit concerned about. It's the community spread, and we're still learning more about COVID, how this works. It's always best to know exactly how people got sick, where they got sick, and who they were around when they got sick. If you don't know that, the potential for hotspots to develop is much greater. But I think everything we do is with the backdrop of COVID still there, still addressing it, and still fighting that fight that we asked Minnesotans to fight. But I said when the special session came back, there was a responsibility for them to take, they being the legislature, to take a look at the emergency powers and make the legislature's voice known. After that, we had two major priorities, and we've been talking about that, obviously, for the last 22 days since the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, is police reform and accountability, which has swept the nation. President Trump himself made some executive orders today dealing with that, and many other states are doing the same thing. But Minnesota's in the unique position. We're at the epicenter of this, and the expectations are that that would get done. That is the one message. The other message was making sure that we built a strong and equitable economy for everyone in Minnesota. And one of the key pieces of that, and has always been a tool, has been a tool in good economies. It's especially a good tool in a down economy, and that's the local jobs and project bill called the bonding bill. And this thing has been worked on for months and months. We took the opportunity to Lieutenant Governor and myself took the opportunity to travel across the state. You're going to be hearing today in just a little bit from Mayor Dowse, Mayor of Red Wing. You're going to hear from Jennifer Mudge, representing building trades and the folks that are here. And you're going to hear from Parks and Recreation Board Superintendent Al Bangora about what these projects were. And I want to just be very clear. We asked communities what they needed. These projects have been vetted for years, and we went out and toured water treatment plants. We walked through armories with leaky roofs. I went 90 feet below the surface of Minneapolis to look at the storm sewers that were built over 100 years ago to make the case that Minnesota needs to invest in our infrastructure and needs to invest in our people. Not only will it create jobs, it keeps the value of our most precious assets up. And we put those online. And we asked for comments on them, and they were vetted. That happened, and it was ready to go in January. I am pleased to see that this week the Senate has decided to do their bonding bill. I don't know how they're going to do all that work. I don't know how they're going to talk to everybody, but I am willing to say at least we're getting somewhere. And for Minnesotans out there listening, if you're wondering how bonding works, and I oftentimes hear this, that governments should have to do what families have to do. You have to balance the budget. You've got a paycheck and you got expenditures, and they better match up. In fact, you better have a little more to save for a rainy day. Well, that's what Minnesota has done. And there are several things you can do. You can get a job that pays you more or work more hours, or you can cut expenditures. But one of the things that you do is the one thing that families do, the greatest piece of personal wealth that a family has is their home. And I think about when people say, well, we can't afford to do a bonding bill. I remember as young teachers, my wife and I bought our first home in Mankato. The cost of it was four times what our yearly salary was, so that would have been a 400% of the GDP of expenditure. Over the years, we had to put a new roof on. We did some new windows. We did the upkeep to it. And when we finally got ready to sell that house, it was worth twice as much as it was in the beginning, and it brought financial security. A state is no different than that. If we let our roads deteriorate, we lose our capacity to be able to move goods and people. If we lose our University of Minnesota and the buildings that we need to have and the infrastructure. So we've been making the case for a long time. We need a robust bonding bill. We have put that together, and it has been vetted. I am really excited to have these folks who are here to talk about that. I want to just hearing those stories of where they came from. I don't think the best way to do it is to have a two-hour hearing and then throw in a couple earmarks to try and get a few votes. I will say that. I think we have a very vetted proposal. I think what we did for months and months and months, and what the public, thousands of comments that the public weighed in on because they were out there, I would venture to say, and that's still on the internet for everyone to see what we're asking for, I don't believe that the proposal being put in the Senate is yet on the internet. We've got till Friday to try and get this thing done. According to that, they say they're going home. I would ask on the two things, that us not to leave till we get this bonding bill done, and not to leave till we get real reforms. And we're here today to try and make that case. So I would like to, at this time, have Lieutenant Governor Flanagan come up and talk about how this bonding bill can also fit with rebuilding in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the equity issues that have been brought up for many years. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan.
Flanagan.
To be here with you today to talk about this project, and once again want to thank the governor for his willingness to go down in the sewer in Minneapolis so that I didn't have to. So when we unveiled the local jobs and projects plan back in January, we already felt the urgency to get this done, as the governor talked about these conversations that we had all across the state about how incredibly important investing in Minnesota is. Minnesota is already facing a housing crisis that could be alleviated at historic investments in affordable housing across income levels. And we are seeing this play out right now in front of us with a population of folks who are experiencing homelessness, and this investment is critically needed at this time. Many communities across the state are relying on aging water infrastructure that put Minnesotans at risk for polluted drinking water or burst pipes. And emergency services like fire stations and National Guard readiness centers are in desperate need of 21st century upgrades so that they can protect the health and safety of our communities. Many of these projects have been waiting for years, and community leaders like the ones that we have here with us today told us that they didn't know how much longer they could wait. And while we could not have imagined what this June looks like back in January, those needs are very much still there. The COVID-19 pandemic and the damage to Minneapolis and St. Paul in the wake of George Floyd's murder did not eliminate the need for capital investment across the state. They have emphasized it, especially for communities of color and for communities in greater Minnesota. This is the rainy day that Minnesota has been preparing for. We have an opportunity right now to make meaningful investments in the projects that will keep Minnesotans healthy and safe, that will build resiliency and true equity into the way that we do things, and that will build stronger communities across the state. The time for a robust bonding bill is right now, and we must act. So with that, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Mayor Sean Douse of Red Wing.
All right, so we're going to cut into that press conference. Just wanted to get the main highlights there from Governor Tim Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, giving us an update on what's happening with the COVID situation and then talking about the importance of the bonding bill. A little bit later on in the show, we'll highlight what's being debated at the Minnesota State Legislature. They're certainly talking about the bonding bill, but lots of other topics are on the agenda, and we're going to give you a rundown of all that they're talking about coming up probably in the second half of the show today. It's Brett Johnson, joined alongside by Patrick Lilia on the other side of the production glass. Patrick, how are things going with you today?
Things are going really well, doing some work for this weekend. You know, kind of like you and I touched on last Tuesday, if you've listened to Brett and Matt and Robert, you're not quite getting the full picture of what we have to offer on 950. I mean, as long as you don't listen to just the afternoon show.
Yeah, I thought you were taking a shot at me right there, Patrick, calling me out on the airwaves. No, I know what you mean. We have a lot of great weekend programs here on the station. Paul Metza just came in and recorded a new episode of the Wall of Power Radio Hour. Going to jog your memory, Patrick. Who was he talking to today, and what was that topic about?
He was talking to the owner of Palmer's Bar. I actually can't quite remember. I don't want to get his name wrong. His first name was Tony. His last name started with a Z.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on CNN and MSNBC this past couple of weeks. So you can get an insight on what's going on down on Lake Street here from a great musician, a great classic bar on the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Paul set some really great guests in to get some really good perspectives on the things going on, both locally and nationally over the last 3 weeks. I really think you guys should check out Paul's show Saturday night at 6. I think it's 3 or Sunday at 4.
Just Saturdays at 6 p.m., but you can always find that podcast version. Just go to your favorite podcasting app, search for the Wall of Power Radio Hour, and you'll be able to find that. And just to highlight some other weekend shows, Ellie 2.0 Radio. Again, I played an excerpt of that on yesterday's show, getting Ellie's reaction to that Supreme Court ruling, which basically said that employers can no longer discriminate against their employees on the basis of their sex or their sexual orientation or their gender. Gee, again, what a novel concept. She has much more on that. That's Mondays at 7 a.m., and we have lots of other very good programs on our weekends, on our weekend lineup. So, yeah, if you're someone who normally listens to the weekday shows, make sure you check out those weekend shows we also have here on AM 950, LA 2.0 Radio, Wall of Power Radio Hour, Connections Radio, Living Healthy and Aging Well, and, of course, we got Robert Pilot doing I'm Awake every Saturday from 1 till 3. Find that full schedule over at AM950radio.com. Well, let's get into the news of the day. Some good news to report on updates for COVID-19. Yeah, we don't often hear about good news, but this is really good coming out of the UK, as the BBC is reporting that this drug, this was an existing drug that I can't quite figure out what it was used to treat before, but it's been around for a while. It's called dexamethasone. Catchy name right there, dexamethasone. And this is a pretty significant development because it cuts the risk of death by a third in patients that are on ventilators. That is a big-time development because the next closest treatment we had for COVID-19 was remdesivir, which I think was only cutting the mortality rate by about like 12%. This one cuts the mortality rate for those on ventilators by a third, or if you like percentages, that would be 33%. And even those on oxygen, it still reduced deaths by a fifth, or 20%. And more good news on this is that it's relatively cheap. $63.26 worth of the drug will allow you to treat 8 patients. And that's a big development for countries that, well, don't quite aren't quite as wealthy as some in North America or Europe. Now, I do want to express some caution on this, though, this drug dexamethasone, because this data was released, well, from a press release. We still don't have access to the academic paper. So I think we do need to exercise a little bit of caution on that, since this did come from a company press release. I most certainly hope that they're correct, that it will reduce the mortality rate by a third for patients on ventilators, or a fifth on those with oxygen or those that need oxygen. But from a press release, I'm going to be a little bit skeptical on that until we can see the academic research paper. Other COVID news to report today. This is really sad news. Representative Ilhan Omar's father died due to complications from the coronavirus / COVID-19. That was reported last Monday night. As the release said, "It is with tremendous sadness and pain that I share that my father, Nur Omar Mohammed, passed away due to complications from COVID-19. No words can describe what he meant to me and all who knew him." She and her father came to the U.S. as refugees back in 1995 from Somalia during that country's civil war. So, yeah, COVID-19 still not going away, even though countries and states are loosening their restrictions. Still, COVID-19 discriminates against no one. It can affect anyone out there. And unfortunately, yeah, it did end up leading to the death of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's father. Also in the news today, I want to touch on some Supreme Court cases that, of course, were ruled on, and other cases that the court is not going to rule on. First, I want to follow up on the big announcement that we, of course, had yesterday with the Supreme Court ruling that employers can no longer discriminate against employees on the basis of sexual orientation or gender. The timing of this I found really curious, because on Friday, We, of course, had the Trump administration during the infamous Friday news dump announce that under Obamacare, well, doctors and healthcare providers can discriminate against transgender people. That is very, very bad news, and that's probably why that was included in that late afternoon Friday news dump. Fridays are always really interesting to follow the news because typically when you get to the afternoon, that's when a lot of people and politicians like to dump their bad news. So that's probably a reason why that announcement from the administration was put on a Friday afternoon. But of course, then we got the good news Monday about that Supreme Court ruling. And I just wonder on that because while the Trump administration and President Trump can't know ahead of time how the court will rule, they probably did have an indication that the ruling was going to go against them, being that it was 6-3. I mean, if you're talking about a situation where even Neil Gorsuch rules against you, the prosecutor or whoever the lawyer was representing the State Department and the Trump administration in that case probably had a pretty good indication that the case wasn't going very well for them. So maybe their thinking will be, well, we'll put this ugly news dump on Friday about healthcare providers being able to deny transgender people healthcare services, dump that on Friday, and then wait for that Supreme Court ruling to, well, cover up the bad news that we had on Friday. As someone pointed out to me, yeah, that's often what happens when you get news from the government, especially good news. Sometimes that's used to cover up bad news that occurs, and well, that very well might be the case. Like I said, ahead of time, the Trump administration probably didn't know for sure that that Supreme Court ruling was going to go against them. But given that even Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, by the way, ruled against them, they probably had a pretty good idea that that ruling was not going to go their way. Now, a few other cases that are not being taken up by the Supreme Court, and this is pretty significant. So, in theory, the justices could have taken a case that has to do with qualified immunity for police officers. Now, just to refresh your memory on what qualified immunity is, under qualified immunity, police and other government officials are immune from federal civil lawsuits unless their actions violated clearly established legal precedents at the time. So essentially, in more plain English, that means you can't really sue government officials or police officers for personal damages unless there's really extreme circumstances. And as we've seen in the past with police officers, that almost never happens. Now, the Supreme Court had a chance to revisit this idea of qualified immunity, but they decided to reject the case. Now, here's why I want to point this out, because in order for the Supreme Court to even hear a case, four justices have to say, hey, we're okay hearing this case. Again, there's nine justices. It takes a 5-4 majority to make a ruling, but it only takes four of the justices to agree to hear the case. So even though a majority are probably going to rule the other way, it only takes four justices to agree to hear the case. And that's why this is kind of significant, because if you think about that, it means that there were at least six Supreme Court justices who were probably going to uphold the idea of qualified immunity, at least six of them, because, again, like I said, it takes four to hear a case, and they already rejected this qualified immunity case. So it's disappointing because if six said no, that means at least one of the so-called liberal justices also decided not to hear this case. On a little bit more of the good news side, in terms of cases that the Supreme Court decided not to take up, they did say that they would not be hearing court challenges to open carry restrictions that were put in place in Maryland and New Jersey, as most Supreme Court experts are thinking that, well, for now, even though the Supreme Court does have a right-wing tilt, they're probably not going to be taking up any new Second Amendment disputes. Basically, they are probably going to be sticking with that 2008 decision called Heller versus the District of Columbia, which did affirm the right to keep a gun at home for personal protection. That was a landmark decision from about, 12 years ago. And most experts are saying that, at least for now, even with that right-wing tilt on the Supreme Court, probably not going to be taking up any more Second Amendment cases, even if it is a challenge from gun rights activists, like in this case, where we did have gun rights activists challenging open carry restrictions in Maryland and New Jersey. And one more court-related piece of news. This is actually the Minnesota Supreme Court. I didn't even know this was working its way through the Minnesota Supreme Court. But apparently a group of citizens were suing Governor Tim Walz and asking for a recall of the governor. Not surprisingly, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Lori Gildeda, wrote an 11-page order that states that the recall threshold for elected officials is very, very high and necessarily high, and the bid to remove Walz did not meet those requirements. So, yeah, Governor Tim Walz is not going to be recalled. I didn't even know this was working its way through the court system, so that's out there, though. Walz not going to be recalled.
I actually got a whiff of this a couple weeks ago. I went for a drive. I was up in Crow Wing County, which is not exactly blue territory, and I drove by a restaurant which had recallwalz.com on its marquee. That was the first I learned that this was even a thing, and I didn't know, hear anything more about it until this came down yesterday.
Yeah, so I guess that was maybe an issue in some areas of greater Minnesota, as you were talking about. By the way, what's that website? I might have to check this out during the commercial break.
I think it was just called recallwalz.com.
Recallwalz.com. Well, there is a minority of people who are very much in favor of recalling Walz and curbing his emergency order. As a little side note, I was going to get early. Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, who is a Republican, is facing a primary challenge from an attorney named Richard Dahl. Richard Dahl thinks Gazelka has not done enough to curb Governor Tim Walz's emergency powers. So even though Gazelka will probably end up winning that primary, it's still significant that the Senate Majority Leader is facing a somewhat, I don't know the best term, I wouldn't say legitimate maybe, but somewhat of a credible challenge from this well-known attorney in the area by the name of Richard Dahl. But yeah, there certainly is a very vocal minority of people that are in favor of curbing those emergency powers that the governor has exercised. By the way, Governor Tim Walz did extend that emergency order through mid-July. We're going to take a break, come on back with more news. We're going to talk about the latest developments with police abolition and police reform, and also some news with the state legislature. That's all on the way next on FYI Politics.
Not only does Rudy Luther Toyota have a great selection of new vehicles, but Rudy Luther is also one of the largest volume Toyota certified used vehicle dealers in the country. Quality and low prices are benchmarks of Rudy Luther. They offer a 7-year, 100,000-mile warranty and feature incredibly low interest rates. This June, you can get financing at 0% on certified used RAV4s and Camrys for well-qualified buyers. But remember, this offer is only good for June. Find your next car today at Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Did you know there's deconstruction funding available now for homeowners and contractors in Hennepin County? If you are embarking on a remodel or teardown this year, consider hiring Better Futures Minnesota's deconstruction crews instead of demolition. By taking a house or building apart by hand instead of destroying it with heavy equipment, the materials can be reused or recycled instead of going into the landfill. It is much more cost-effective and is a carbon-neutral solution. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under business services to learn more.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pinigigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
They really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting their country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join.
Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving their country as well.
I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture.
Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, Tuesday edition of the show. Now, let's get you an update on what's happening with police-related news. So, at the state legislature, after 5 hours of the debate, the DFL-led House and their Public Safety Committee has passed three major police reform bills that were assembled by the DFL caucus. One of them was a chokehold ban, which did surprisingly get a vote from a Republican. That would be Representative Tim Miller, who is from Prinsburg. Apologies to anyone who resides in that area, but he was one of the people who voted with the Democrats on that chokehold ban. So a little bit of surprise there. And then the committee in the House, that would be the Public Safety Committee, also passed a bill that would ban warrior-style training. Still unbelievable that that's a thing, that we have warrior-style training where basically the police are trained to perceive everything as a threat. Set to meet a little bit later on today, the State Government Finance Division of the House is going to be debating a bill which, when there are officer-related deaths, or to phrase that differently, I think a much better way, when the police kill someone, I still never can get over that term, officer-related death. Just say what it is, the officer killed someone. Yeah, they're talking about possibly having every case signed to the Attorney General and then appropriating money to the Attorney General to prosecute those cases. Probably a step in the right direction, but ultimately, even when you're talking about whoever the Attorney General is, they still very much do have connections to law enforcement, which still can lead to conflicts of interest, as we talked about last week when I was speaking with Ricardo Levins Morales of MPD 150. He brought up a good point that, yeah, even if you bring in outside prosecutors, when you have these police shootings and these cases end up going to the court systems, you can bring in outside counsel, but generally you're still going to find those types of conflicts of interest. But that bill, at least, is being debated as we speak. The State Government Finance Division of the Minnesota House talking about how those cases that involve police deaths should be assigned to the Attorney General rather than the local county prosecutor. Then in the Hill, they were writing about this yesterday, and I found it to be an interesting piece because it's something we talked about a few weeks ago, the phrasing of abolish the police or defund the police. They wrote a pretty extensive piece on this, quoting a number of activists and Democratic politicians and talking about how we should phrase this idea of abolishing and defunding the police. This is the Reverend Al Sharpton, who was speaking on MSNBC's Morning Joe this past week. He said the slogan may be misleading without interpretation, and he added that he understood the phrase to be more about deep-rooted reform efforts. So that was from Al Sharpton. He went on to say that I don't think anyone other than the far extremes are saying we don't want to have any kind of policing at all. In this piece, they also talked to some other activists and people involved with this, including Evan Neerman. He's the CEO and founder of Crisis Communications, a PR firm. And he said the message does have its pros and cons, bringing up that, well, at least on the pro side, and this is a good point he brings up, that it is a direct call for action rather than having something that's a little bit more vague where you say, like, equal rights for all or justice for all. Those come across as being much more vague, where if you use terminology like defund or abolish the police, that does call for direct action. But long term, he said, on the con side, well, it could be misinterpreted by people to think that you want to get rid of all law enforcement whatsoever. So, yeah, that debate has certainly been happening at the national level. And I just want to point out something and emphasize this again. Who cares what anyone thinks about in Congress or in the White House about abolishing or defunding the police, because ultimately they're not going to have a say in that matter. In fact, for the most part, even the governor and the state legislature probably won't have much of a say in terms of abolishing, defunding, reforming, whatever you want to call it, getting rid of the police, because that ultimately comes down to your city council and, to a lesser extent, the mayor. So I would just caution people that if you're disappointed by what you're hearing from your representatives, whether that would be Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and whoever else, just keep in mind that what they think on that issue largely doesn't matter a whole lot, because that decision is ultimately going to come at the local level from your city council and your mayor. And that's usually how government works, as I've brought up so many times. You're more impacted by government at the local and the state level than you are at the federal level. So I kind of read this when I see different politicians saying or coming across as a little wishy-washy on defunding and abolishing the police. Who cares? It's going to come down to that local level. We're going to take a break and come on back with some more news from the state legislature as you're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces strives to maintain a healthy environment for their customers and employees. They invite you to visit weekdays 9:30 to 5:30 and Saturdays 9:30 to 4. You'll find an uncrowded and comfortable social space to learn about Woodland Stoves' many indoor and outdoor fireplace products. More at woodlandstoves.com. Hi, this is Laura with Food Freedom Radio. In a time of growing food insecurity around the world, in the U.S., farmers are dumping milk, plowing under lettuces, and in Minnesota, a contract farmer had 61,000 birds killed against his wishes. The root structures of our industrial food system are becoming visible. Now it's time to pull up these roots, shopping farmers markets, co-op, buying directly, and growing your own food. And that's what we talk about every week on Food Freedom Radio, Saturdays at 8 a.m. or anytime on podcast.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. Whether it's storm damage from the past or a new issue that's popped up over the years, Snap Construction is the company we trust for all roofing, siding, windows, and exterior construction needs. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, and window company in the metro. Ryan has worked with many of our listeners and is excited to help more.
Thank you to all the listeners we have worked with and all the listeners at AM 950 that we haven't had the opportunity to work with yet. This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. Safety of our homeowners and our team at Snap Construction has always been the utmost priority. We are still offering free, no-contact estimates. This summer at Snap Construction, we've rolled out a new referral program. Mention AM950, and we'll make a donation to the station in your name. Together, we can all work to ensure AM950 continues to thrive and grow in our communities. Call for your free estimate today. 612-333-SNAP, 612-333-SNAP.
We've been spending more time in our homes the last few months than ever. Have you looked at your floors? Are they just dirty? Or is it time to replace your flooring? Well, lucky for you, nobody knows carpet and flooring more than the experts at Zero Res. Z Floors by Zero Res partnered with Shaw and Mohawk to offer custom solutions to fit any lifestyle and budget. Whether you're considering carpet, hardwood, luxury, vinyl, or tile, Z Floors by Zero Res will bring their mobile showroom to you for a safe, free in-home consultation. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 93. Tonight clear with a low around 70. Wednesday sunny with a high near 94. And Thursday rain with a high around 90. And with bars and restaurants set to reopen for both indoor and outdoor seating, make sure you consider our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants for the next time you go out. All of those restaurants are locally owned and operated, and they have a wide variety of food and drinks you can choose from. Find a full list of all of those restaurants at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Mm-hmm.
FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, a Tuesday afternoon on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So, yeah, just going back to what we were talking about in that last segment, yeah, I don't really care what Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi or even Bernie Sanders or AOC, I don't care what they think about on this idea of abolishing the police, because ultimately, yeah, that comes down to your local level. And what happens at your city council or your state legislature has a much bigger impact on your day-to-day life than what happens from the president or what happens over in Congress. Case in point, let's run down what's being debated at the special session of the state legislature. A number of bills to highlight. Don't have time to go through them all, but I'll give you the main ones that I've kind of been following along with. The Minnesota House, of course, controlled by DFLers, has a provision that would let liquor stores damaged by arson or looting to reopen in temporary locations as long as those cities approve. And that has a pretty significant impact for any of those businesses that, of course, were burned down during what was happening over the past few weeks, since, well, typically when you're trying to open a liquor store, you face a lot of, and rightfully so, a lot of regulation in terms of that, but they are potentially going to allow them to open up in temporary locations. Be interesting to see how many end up doing that. Also being debated in the state legislature, this is on the Subcommittee on Elections. This is proposed by Ray Dean, a representative from Minneapolis. This is a bill for an act relating to public safety, and essentially what this does is restore the voting rights to felons. We've heard about this movement for a long, long time. Florida, of course, had a constitutional – I don't think it was a constitutional amendment. Let me take that back. They voted on putting this into law, the idea of restoring the voting rights for felons. And Minnesota has been on board, or at least been trying to do this for a number of years, Ray Dean trying to revive this proposal. The technical language says is that it would restore the civil rights to vote of an individual upon release from incarceration or upon sentencing, if no incarceration is imposed, requiring notice. I would still even take that a step further, that prisoners of all people should be allowed to vote. Those are the people who are being impacted the most by the decisions the government makes, because you're in prison. Now, of course, I guess there could be an exception if you're in a private prison, but those for the most part should go away. But yeah, I've never quite gotten the idea that we need to get rid of voting rights once someone gets incarcerated or once someone has been convicted of a crime. If anything, you should have more of a say when you're convicted of a crime, because you're directly impacted by decisions that lawmakers make. So this thing probably not going to pass, being that the Republican-controlled Senate largely has no interest in this bill, especially given the comments from Majority Leader Paul Gazelka saying that they're not even going to pass any sort of criminal justice reform bills. But that's still out there, and who knows, maybe that thing can be passed in the next few sessions should the makeup of the legislature change. Also, sort of in regards to criminal justice reform, the idea of ban the box. Are you familiar with this idea of ban the box? So what this is, on job applications, in the past you would sometimes get asked in Minnesota, and this is still true in other states, if you have been convicted of a felony on a job application. You would obviously answer yes or no. Now, a little over a decade ago in Minnesota, we banned private employers from asking that question on job applications. Have you been convicted of a felony? That's what the ban the box movement has to do with. But there are still exceptions in Minnesota where certain people can still be asked that question on their job applications depending on what they're applying for. So let's dive into this story from MinnPost. So back in 2009, Minnesota became the second state in the nation to prohibit public employees from including a criminal history question on an initial job application. Then back in 2013, private employers were added to the law, which was a provision that would ban the box for them as well. But this is still significant because there are exceptions where you still can be asked this question, and that would be someone who is applying for a job or applying for a state board or a state commission. Now, there's some technical jargon there, so let's talk about what that means. That means that an applicant for a job processing income taxes, for instance, in Minnesota, does not have to initially declare that they have or have not had a felony conviction. But an applicant to, for instance, be on the board of cosmetology, they do have to still answer that question if whoever is putting the job posting out there, if they have been convicted of a felony. So there is an exception out there if you're applying for a job that has to do with the board, like, for instance, the example in this MinnPost piece, the board of cosmetology, you still can technically be asked this question. Now, prior to the beginning of the 2020 session, when, well, everything hit the fan with COVID-19, both houses of the state legislature were open to this idea of banning the box altogether, no matter what your situation would be, including state boards, which right now is still the exception. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka was kind of going back and forth on this issue. He liked the idea of it, but he did make this point, and I'm not sure if this is the strongest argument, but this is what he said. He said that there are some experts who think the inability to ask that question actually leads to some employers to be less likely to consider young black men and young Hispanic men. So he's putting a different spin on this, saying that by banning the box, you're in theory preventing employers from discriminating against minorities, since the stereotype exists out there that, well, minorities are more likely to be convicted of a felony and so on and so on. And the argument Gazelka is making is that by preventing employers from asking that question, in theory, employers could just assume that someone who is black or Hispanic or of another minority, they could assume that they have been convicted of a felony or do have a criminal history. I'm not sure that's necessarily the best argument out there because – yeah, that just doesn't really strike me as being the best argument against it. But there's been no movement from him or the Republican caucus, by the way, to take that a step further with his argument, which is repealing the Ban the Box initiative altogether. But that still is being debated. The legislature probably won't come up during this special session. But as I brought up during that previous thing, we were talking about the ability to restore voting rights for felons could come up in a future session. And a couple more bills to highlight before we head to our final break of the show. This one I'm very happy to see being debated in the state legislature, an anti-gentrification bill, because there's a lot of concern that potentially businesses that have been burned down or destroyed amid with what's happened over the past few weeks could end up just getting gentrified when they rebuild. So yesterday, a pair of bills were introduced that would limit the redevelopment of parts of St. Paul and Minneapolis impacted by, well, what's been happening for the past few weeks. In fact, Governor Walz has even mentioned multiple times in news interviews that there is a fear of gentrification in neighborhoods that have been impacted by the unrest that's been happening for the past few weeks. So we're going to get into real technical language here, but the bill was introduced to impose a development moratorium allowing cities to use debt obligations to shape future development that was imposed by a group of Minneapolis lawmakers and House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler. Yeah, getting kind of into the weeds with that language right there, but at least the interpretation that lawmakers are having from Minneapolis on this is that, in theory, it would slow down or completely stop gentrification of buildings that have been affected by what's happening. Now, the moratorium may exclude actions to reopen commercial and industrial business and rental housing at substantially the same levels as rents as before the event. So, in other words, what they're saying is that if you're rebuilding your business or rebuilding an apartment building, you can still go ahead and rebuild as long as you are having your rents roughly the same as what they were before. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So maybe good legislation, although just because you have lawmakers from Minneapolis still doesn't necessarily mean that they are against gentrification altogether. So remains to be seen what type of impact this bill might have if it does become enacted into law. Hey, let's get to Randy in St. Cloud, who wants to chime in on the conversation. Hey, Randy, what are you thinking about today?
Too many things, but if you know the whole, what's driving me crazy lately is we're into the whole, is it good marketing to defund the police or the police, all of that stuff, instead of talking about what we need to do, mm-hmm. which is get rid of guys like Derek Chauvin. I mean, and if we would just cancel all the police, like they did this in New Jersey.
Yeah, Camden, New Jersey, right.
Right. Cancel them all. Reapply for the job. If you want the job, come and take out an application. But we need to change the way we assess who it can be. And I heard a Vietnam vet talking a couple days ago, and he was extremely articulate. I'm not. I don't remember his name, but he was saying a lot of the police, a lot of the problem right now is the police that are being hired are war veterans, mm-hmm. not just veterans of the military, but they've been at war. And that training is completely different. And having a brother who's 100% disabled from PTSD from Vietnam, I know that there's no way to know what's going to trigger him. So we got to stop hiring military guys to be our police. That's part of the problem. And the training is so off the rails, that warrior training, and then our wonderful head of the police union, well, I'm going to be the first one to take it. If he makes that not legal, I don't care what he do. What's he going to do to me?
Yeah.
You know, but that's what has to happen. And instead of having an internal affairs department, take the money that funds internal affairs for the police department and pay that money to a civilian affairs department. They'll investigate and get professionals to investigate the police when stuff goes down, instead of having the cops investigate the cops, which is so completely ridiculous. It's beyond belief that it's been the thing for how long.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I could go on for about 3 weeks, but I'll shut up now.
All right. Thanks for the phone call, Randy. Yeah, I can't speak to any firsthand knowledge about the idea of banning veterans from the police force, being that, I just don't have enough personal experience talking about that. But as Randy brought up, he most certainly does. And then going back to his idea about how we're debating how we should phrase defund or abolish the police, I'm more and more moving in his direction where, who cares what we call the thing? Because I go back to my original point. Doesn't really matter what Congress or Donald Trump or Joe Biden think about this thing. It matters more what Lisa Bender or Keith Ellison, those are two of the members of the Minneapolis City Council, it matters what they think. So far, they're on board with making significant changes to the law enforcement system in Minneapolis, and you need to keep up the pressure on them to make sure that, they maybe don't get a little wishy-washy and change their mind on that issue. So that's who we should really be focusing on, and Randy brings up a good point that it does, kind of distract from things when we get caught up in the semantics of that. Is it defund or is it abolish the police? Yeah, I'm moving more and more that direction, but I just bring that up because they debate that all you want at the national level, because ultimately it's not going to impact how things are eventually going to look in Minneapolis with or without a police force. We'll take one final break, come on back with a few more miscellaneous stories. It's FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Minnehaha Falls Landscaping creates outdoor environments that grow beauty and support health and wellness. We provide everything needed for people and pollinators to grow healthy together in the home landscape. Contact us for landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, rain gardens, and bee lawns. Minnehaha Falls Landscaping is a business rooted in healthy soil. We rely on soil health to beautify landscapes, restore ecosystems, and protect pollinators. We love sharing our soil secrets with everyone. Visit us at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
Listen to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake every Saturday, 1 to 3 p.m. Each Saturday, we have guests speaking their truth from all over Turtle Island. Support comes from Mitchell Hamlin School of Law on beautiful Summit Avenue in St. Paul, Minnesota. At Mitchell Hamlin, law students can stay in their communities and specialize in Indian law. They can complete their JD full-time, part-time, in-person, and online. Learn more at mitchellhamlin.edu.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, I'm Matt McNeil, and I want to encourage you to join me weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. for The Matt McNeil Show. It's a Twin Cities-based full hour of talk where we discuss what's going on in the state and in the nation from a Minnesota perspective. We'll be joined by a lot of great guests, and we'll take your phone calls. Interact with us on the Twitter page, at Matt McNeil Show, the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, The Matt McNeil Show, and on email, comment at am950radio.com. The Matt McNeil Show, weekday afternoons at 3, right here on AM 950.
Next Chapter Booksellers is the perfect gift idea for Dad this Father's Day. Whether the dad on your list likes baseball, barbecues, or biographies, Next Chapter Booksellers can help you find just the right book to make his Father's Day a special occasion. Plus, Next Chapter even sells cards and puzzles. Call them daily between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. to talk to a bookseller. They love making recommendations. That's 651-225-8989 or nextchapterbooksellers.com.
Tune in for Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up, summer reading. It's about time.
Literally. We're coming up on our 500th episode. So this year's summer reading list is all about time.
We'll talk to philosophers, poets, and physicists who've put time at the center of their thought and writing.
Time for summer reading. Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk. Every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
Final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson on AM 950. You can call us at 952-946-6205. Don't necessarily have to come on the airwaves if you don't want. You can always pass along your comments to our producer, Patrick Lilia, or email those to comment at am950radio.com or send something on our Facebook live stream. I know we had a couple of callers chime in during the commercial break that didn't quite want to jump on the airwaves. Any comments we want to share there, Patrick?
Well, actually, Randy called back. He had a very interesting point to make, and I actually just saw this earlier today as well. The 13th Amendment prohibits slavery except for those who have been committed of a crime and are in prison. Or something quite kind of along those lines. And Randy was saying that's why they want to keep people from voting, because if you're in prison, you're basically a slave. Or could be.
That's a very good point from Randy. And boy, if we were ever going to pass another constitutional amendment, that would be one I would very much be in favor of changing. But I'm not sure if we're ever going to see another constitutional amendment passed. Just because of the partisan nature of how the country is structured right now, the bar for doing so is so incredibly high. I don't know the exact specifications off the top of my head, but I know you need something like two-thirds of the state to agree to modify and put an amendment into the Constitution. So even something like that, which is a very reasonable change that Randy was talking about, let's not have slave labor for people who are in prison. You think that should be prohibited in the Constitution, but as he brings up, it doesn't look to be the case right now. So even you can put something through as non-controversial as that, and it probably still wouldn't make its way as a constitutional amendment.
Also got a call during that break about gentrification, how a lot of times Republicans just look the other way when disasters happen so people can swoop in and buy those things at dirt cheap and build them up. And so for Lake Street, for example, but he also mentioned examples like Puerto Rico after Maria and after other hurricanes have hit, that developers swoop in and buy this land for cheap prices and build it up.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. And I would add that it's not just Republicans who do that. There's a lot of cases where Democratic leaders in cities, not just in Minnesota, but around the entire country, Yeah, they can talk about how they're against gentrification and having a local, vibrant community, but sometimes they don't always legislate that way. So, yeah, even going back to that gentrification bill we were talking about, even though this provision was written by Minneapolis DFL representatives, several of them, still doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to be against gentrification or stopping it. I certainly hope it is the case that they're coming down on the right side of this issue, but just given past experiences we've seen, not just in Minnesota, but around the entire country, remains to be seen whether that will be the case. And that's if that bill even ends up being enacted into law. All right, a few more random pieces of news before we wrap up the show today. Looking at the response rate for the census, Sketch State came in number one for response rate. That would be no surprise here, Minnesota. 70.9% is our response rate for the census. Who is number two? Wisconsin at 68.4%. So upper Midwest leading the way in that category. And then one final thing to talk about. So trustees at the Minnesota State System of Colleges have announced that they are going to be freezing tuition for the first half of the upcoming school year. And then in the second half of the year, they will have a 3% increase. Now, the chancellor, Devinder Malhotra, says they propose covering much of the lost revenue by temporarily stopping the purchase of instructional equipment. Just pause for a second here, Patrick. That is some incredibly expensive instructional equipment if you can literally cut all of your instructional equipment and somehow that covers the loss of revenue from tuition increases. Someday I kind of want to do a deep dive into why tuition is so high outside of, well, just how much of a mess the lending system is, because it's much more than that. And, well, maybe that's part of it if we're buying that expensive of instructional equipment. All right, that's all the time I got left for my show today. We got Matt McNeil coming up next.